Welcome, everyone. When Stephen Simpson's mother was in a serious car accident in 2002, he had no idea that it would be the spark that ignited his heroin and other drug addiction. Stephen is here today to speak to us about his journey from experimenting with prescription drugs to heroin addiction to recovery, a road he is on today. Stephen will also share his story and talk to us about how he turned tragedy into an opportunity to save millions of lives and help turn tragedy into an opportunity to save lives and help fight back against the rise of prescription drug abuse, addiction, and help people really live their best lives and get on the road to recovery. Stephen, welcome to the show. I am so happy to have you with me today.
Thank you for having me, Erica.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, it takes a lot of courage that you have to share so openly with everybody. And I just want you to know how helpful that is. I mean, I see this day in and day out, and I wrote a book on recovery, and sharing my story with people is, I know, helped, you know, thousands of people too. So I think each one of us that have a story, that have a way to relate to others, it's so powerful, and the reach is endless. You know, you'd never know how far the reach actually goes. So I applaud you for that. And how does it feel to be now in recovery and kind of look back and see how your life has progressed, and kind of like, do you feel like it's meant to be, like where you are today, that you had to go through that in order to be where you are?
Yes, I do. Through much of my life, there's been tragedy with my friends and with my drug addiction. But being at where I'm at now, able to help people, actually helps myself as well, because the feeling you get when other people come out of that fog, they jump off the roller coaster, is unreal.
Yeah, and do you see now that kind of what you had to go through was there in order for you to relate to others too? You know, when you're giving speeches now, or when you're talking to families, and you're talking about Safer Lock, I think it's pretty incredible how you can reach into your own story, your own experience, and really relate to others. And people want to relate. You know, people want to hear that they're not alone.
Yes,
don't you agree?
I've been going to some schools lately, and having the kids come up and just open up and start opening up their hearts to you, just because I open up mine back to them, it makes you feel like you're making a difference, whether it be the smallest thing in the world or the biggest thing. But everybody thinks differently, and everybody has their own personality. Throughout my addiction and my tragedy, I can relate it with being so sick and ill in your addiction that really nothing else matters to you other than that point, that time, or that fix.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something where I think people don't understand that, you know, it hijacks your life. Like I was saying to your mother in a previous segment, that, yeah, you know, a lot of people don't understand that's, it's not that you don't love somebody else or love yourself. Well, probably not that much in the moment, but it's really, there's not much else you could think about, because physically it's painful. Emotionally, it's gut wrenching, you know. Mentally, it's like you said, you're living like tunnel vision. You're only focusing on the obsession with the addiction and where the next, you know, fix is coming from, or when the next supply is coming from, that kind of thing. And it's hard for other people to understand that if you're not going through it, or you don't know someone that's gone through it. So I'm happy that you're out there on the front lines sharing your story. I think that's incredible.
Yeah.
So
happy to do it.
So as Safer Lock came into existence, well, let's first talk about, before that happened, just your mother was talking to us about how easy it was for you to kind of get your hands on prescription pills. And where did that idea come from? Was it peers in high school that were doing it? And then you thought to yourself, oh, I know my mom may have some.
I think this is what happened, actually. I had invited over a friend, and we were going to go in the hot tub. So I needed to go get a towel, and my friend ended up walking into my mother's room with me to go get a towel, and he saw on her nightstand the pill bottle of OxyContin. And so he said to me, do you know what that is? And I was like, no, I have no idea. What is it? He's like, that's a really strong painkiller, and it's a great high. And I was like, oh, all right, well, okay. Didn't think much of it. He's like, let's do some. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, I'm 15 years old, and at that mm-hmm. point, I'm not really thinking exactly what it, playing out the whole road, how the next right. 10 years of my life is going to turn out.
Right.
So I ended up doing it with him. And from that moment on, I knew it was there and easily accessible because it was just unscrewing a cap on a prescription pill bottle. And it was made it so I could get it whenever I wanted and for free.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So that was the beginning of it. Yeah.
That was the beginning.
Uh-huh. And don't you feel that, like, you know, I work with clients one-on-one daily, and I have a practice, and I feel like, you know, kind of trying one thing like that, it kind of, your integrity kind of gets compromised, you know? You're like, oh, I tried that. Why not try Percocet? Why not try this, right? From what I've seen and from what I know, one thing leads to the next.
Exactly. Well, I already did it this one time. What's the second time? And then
right.
all of a sudden it's like the 100th time, and then you start to get an education of the drugs that are around you, and you're like, oh, that can do the same thing as that? Okay, that's what I'm going to do, because I still mm-hmm. want to feel that way. And then
right.
you experiment more and more with random drugs.
Right. And then so people that are listening can understand this, then your tolerance increases, correct? So as you began
yes,
taking
it
recreationally, right, your tolerance, and so you need more. People, because
exactly.
I want people to understand this that are listening, because people say, how could somebody, you know, I parents say this to me all the time, how could someone want to take 20 pills, or how could someone possibly take 10 pills and not fall over? And I keep saying, well, their tolerance builds, right? So can you expand
yeah.
on that a little? Yeah.
I actually have a friend who I couldn't believe this, but he was doing about 20 to 30, 80 milligram Oxycontin a day. And another one of the 80s could actually kill somebody if they take one of them and they've never taken it before.
Wow.
And he made up that tolerance so high because he was just doing it so often. Your body just keeps demanding more and more and more and wanting more. And you're not thinking about an overdose either. At mm-hmm. the time, you're just getting that next fix and going at it, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm happy to hear you say that, because I think, you know, I don't think people understand how easy it is to become addicted to this stuff, too. Like you said, it's something where you take it just kind of naively, and then all of a sudden it becomes something that takes over your life for 10 years.
Exactly. And
yeah.
what happens, too, is then you start hanging out with that type of friend group as well. So you're losing those good friends that you've had, and you're gaining these people with knowledge of the drugs or are doing drugs. So what's going to happen? You are kind of who your friends are. So when you're mm-hmm. around them, you got to choose wisely to your friends, because sooner or later now they're doing heroin, you know, later in the road, they're going to get you on heroin.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm happy you said that. We do attract who we are, you know, and if you're a drug addict, you're going to attract other drug addicts. So, I mean, it's honestly a vibrational thing. If you're not caring about yourself and you're not doing sports like you used to, you're not, you know, engaging with the same people, you're going to start to find other things in common with other people. And usually if it's a drug scene, it's going to move pretty fast down a very dark road.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. So when your mom mentioned you stopped doing sports, you stopped kind of obviously hanging out with certain friends, things like that. Did you start to feel like a little spiritless at first, or did you feel like did you feel a loss in your old self, or did that not come till years later?
That didn't come till years later, because I always thought, I'm just going to quit this tomorrow. I'm going to quit it tomorrow, you know, and I can do it whenever I want to.
Right.
But as far as when I was losing, not doing sports anymore, I I used that time to just go out with the friends that we're using. And so it really, that was kind of playtime from then on. Because you're in a constant sense of denial and lying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and the lying just, you become better and better at it. And
yes.
That's it. But the anxiety that all this creates, too, we don't talk about. I mean, whether or not you're feeling the anxiety as a teenager, you put it in the back of your mind, it's still, I think, very stressful. That's why I think eventually people, it all catches up to you, you know?
Yes, it didn't catch up to me until I was about 20 years older. And then it started to hit, but I was still at that point a full-blown addict, and I went to my first rehab. And then I just fought it for the next 4 years.
And I'm happy you're sharing that. Yeah, I'm happy you're sharing that because I was saying to your mom, too, I think everybody's path is different to recovery. Some people get it in one time. Some people it takes 4 years. Some people it takes 15 years, you know, takes 10 rehabs. Yeah. It takes one rehab. But I think the message is, and I don't know, you share this with our audience. The message for me would be to just keep trying. What do you think? I mean, not to give up.
Never ever give up. There's always hope. And if you can always hold your head looking down at your feet, or you can try and look up and see rising out in the future that can come too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whether it be a darker path to get there, you can still get there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we were talking with your mom about the kind of the birth of Safer Lock, and really how your brother kind of started coming up with this idea, and using your story as the catalyst for this, right? You're using your story as part of how this touched their lives and how this came to be. How does it feel to have your story be in the forefront in this way?
I feel honored to be able to come up and put my story out there for other people to learn, as well as get the solution in order to fix the problem. Because, to be honest, I really never would recognize any kind of my family pain, nothing around me. And now I can see it happening all around me, what kind of stuff would happen if I would do it. So with Safer Lock, you can stop it before it starts. Stop it when you're young, when they're young, and before they get curious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And you know, prescription pill abuse and prescription pill addiction wasn't, you know, always so prevalent and so, you know, really readily available for people like it is today. I think that pretty much, I think everybody at some point gets a prescription of some kind, and whether or not that's, you know, an opiate or not, it's still very easy to get, you know. And I think, like I said, your mom, 1 in 3 households in America have somehow been impacted by this prescription pill abuse. So that's a high number. And I think more than ever, it's just, why not be safe? I mean, even if an addiction doesn't start, why not take that preventative step and really, you know, not even give anyone in your family a chance to experiment with it?
Exactly. And you never know. If you have your family over, you have your niece or your nephew, it could be anybody that you're going to protect. Because I got it from my aunt at times, and my aunt was the easiest one, because she didn't ever realize it was actually me, because I was never over there.
Mm-hmm.
And she never knew. Yeah. Even my grandma and grandpa or something, too. And they would never know. Or they would even, they say 1 in 3, but I think it's more than that, because the one out of the other two-thirds are, they don't even know that person got it or even has the problem.
Absolutely. So what are some of, like, the changes you've seen in yourself? Do you feel like you are, you know, obviously, I think authenticity, living an authentic life, is really important. It's one of, like, the core principles in my book that I talk about. Do you feel like now you're on an authentic path, that you kind of gauge things in your life as doing things that feel good to you? And what are some of the good changes you could share with people that may be listening?
I would say, being able to help others and engage myself. I lost my train. Moving forward, and I actually have a fiance now, and having hope in yourself and encouragement to live the next day and just do it one day at a time.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, do you think that there, I mean, for also people that are out there, I mean, how long have you been sober now?
About 2 years, since April 2014.
Oh, congratulations. That's fantastic. And I know that comes with some challenges too, you know, and I think that it's really key that we explain to people that I think treatment's really important and therapy is important and getting help for not only putting down the drug, because that's one part of it, but it's also understanding how to have forgiveness for yourself, forgive others, how to communicate better, how to have boundaries, how to be safe, how to deal with stress in healthy ways, right? It's much
exactly.
more than just...
And it just making sure that you get rid of those bad people that you're using with. I can't talk to them anymore. I had to get pretty much erased every number out of my phone book in order to surround myself by new good people that are actually trying to help you rather than tear you down.
That's very important. Yeah, and to be away from people that are still stuck in their sickness, right?
And exactly, because if they're stuck in the sickness, they want you to go down with them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So that was a big tip kind of you have for people that are changing their lives right now to kind of reset, get a new phone, get rid of,
Yes, get rid of your bad numbers.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Any other tips you have maybe for people out there that are in early recovery?
Seek others' help and open up. Try not to isolate yourself as much. Create an activity for yourself, too. That's always good.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's very helpful to have hobbies and to do things that you enjoy and a good, healthy reward system, you know, like cooking, taking a bath, having some chocolate. You know, there's a lot of different ways in which we can reward ourselves in healthy ways now and not in destructive, poisonous ways, which is really what drugs and alcohol are. So, yes, for sure. Okay, good. And how is your brother doing with everything? And, you know, I heard from your mom, but is everybody kind of in this together and everybody getting the help they need individually? And
everybody is ready on the same page now and taking this very seriously, because they don't want to see anybody else knocking on death's door anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how has the response been about Safer Lock? Do you think people have been really open-minded to using it, and do you think that we could take this to, like, a national level, hopefully, where everybody, you know, even, like I was saying to your mom, hopefully on a congressman and people could get involved in this to require this one day, hopefully?
Yes, it has been getting great response back, because it's what needs to be done. The meds don't need to be there anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And so do you feel like you've kind of have a new identity now, or do you feel like you have allowed yourself, or it's an ongoing process, right, to heal?
Yes, it is. Especially, I've already lost three of my friends, or close friends, have died from opiate pain meds.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Some of them have led to heroin, and then they died from that. But one of them, a 6'3", he was one of my best friends. He's 6'6", actually, a black belt in karate. He hung off of a bridge cross over a highway and hung until he dropped in front of a semi truck, and then they couldn't find anything but pieces left of him.
Oh,
dead ID the body with a wallet, so I never got to see him again.
Yeah.
After that.
Well, sorry about that. That's really really
unfortunate. But if you recognize it and move forward, you can get better.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a hopeless condition to be in, and there is so much hope, and there's so many different paths to recovery, and this is just one way of preventing it. So I really appreciate you sharing about this. And also, just really quick, I know that, it was an opiate prescription pill addiction that started with in your case with you, but it also led to meth, and it led to other things, right? So it's like, I just want people to understand this, that that there is no end to it, that I think once you've kind of tried one thing, there's really no stopping and trying other things or different ways of even using drugs, And some people I've heard say, oh, I would never stick a needle in my arm, and then they wind up doing that. Or, I can't believe my son or daughter would do that. They were, valedictorian, and they were this, they were that, and then all of a sudden, but that's what drugs do to you. It takes you down different paths without you even having any control, really.
Yes, of course it does. And you don't recognize it until it's too late. I mean, I didn't even meet my first pill dealer until I was a couple years into my addiction already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And kids just don't know what they're getting anymore, too, with the pain pills out there. In Sacramento, there were 17 deaths from a fake Norco pill, too. So
yeah,
people are not able to realize what's happening to them till it's too late.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So just to tell everyone one more time, Safer Lock is a 4-digit 1,000 combination locking prescription bottle, right? That could be set to the person's preference, right? So you pick your combination, you put your prescription pills in a bottle. Can you just explain to everybody how that works?
So you can choose anywhere from 10,000 combinations by just using a simple reset pin.
Uh-huh.
And you can set your combination to whatever you would like, and then pull out the reset pin and screw it on the bottle. And it locks it up for you. And when it's screwed on there, once you mix up the combination, the cap will just spin. So you cannot get it off.
Without that combination. That's so fantastic. And now just tell everybody, what are you doing today? What do you do with yourself these days? What inspires you?
Getting out and talking with the kids at high school is one of the things that I really like doing, and helping to save lives, and being passionate about the Safer Lock. And it makes me so I can help other people, and that really just moves me more and more forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And how does gratitude play a part in your life? Can you talk to that a little bit, or do you find that being grateful on a daily basis is helpful?
Yes, because you're not grateful when you're in the abyss of your addiction. And you have to be grateful for those around you, too, because everybody has something around them that you can be grateful for. Maybe if it's just a hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
There's anything.
Right.
There's lots of very good things in life.
Right. Absolutely. Just the fact that you're breathing today and that you have, that you're healthy and in one piece is a good thing. And just for those parents, families, kids that are listening today, the fact that your mom was so resilient in helping you, and that she was so unstoppable almost, and help save your life. That's at least how I hear it. What do you say to parents out there that are listening that want to keep intervening, to tell them to go for it? I mean, can you just speak to that really quick?
I would say that they want to intervene. Make sure you notice the signs before you do it. Random places where you hide your medications. I would put them inside the seams of my pants. Look for just different stash spots, I think, inside their pants to do their laundry. Lock it up, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you for that. That actually is a great thing for people to hear, because these are kind of the inner secrets of somebody that has been through this. So I think it's good for family members to hear that today, what to look for and what the red flags would be. So thank you so much. I appreciate you sharing that with us. So I just want to let our audience know where to find you, where to find Safer Lock. It's www.saferlockrx.com, right? SaferLockRx.com. And you guys are on Facebook as well?
Yes, we are.
So that's okay. So that's www.facebook.com/thesaferlock. And at Twitter, at SaferLockRx. I am with you guys all the way and hoping that this really gets into the hands of every single person that has a prescription pill, that has prescription pills in their house. So we're on a mission together, and I'm very, very grateful that you came on and shared your story and shared your courage. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, you're listening to Rewired Radio on Radio MD. I'm Erica Spiegelman. Thank you for joining us, and stay well.